All right, so check this out. I'm a believer, and this is my ghost story. Growing up in the 1970s, my parents hired a maid. This was a common thing. Black women took the bus to the suburbs, they donned white maid uniforms, and worked for upper-middle-class white families. Becky had been with the family since the early 60s, and she worked for my grandparents as well. I'd often see my grandfather waiting for Becky at the corner bus stop when I was riding to school in the morning. Becky was truly part of our family. She worked for my grandparents 2 days a week, and for us, another 2 days a week. I was always a little jealous of her third family, where she worked a separate 2 days a week. I didn't know them, but I felt like Becky belonged to me. My name is Rebecca. I was supposed to be called Becky, but when our Becky came to work for us, it would have been too confusing. So I always was Rebecca. Becky was a kind, gentle soul. She always put candy under our pillows. She cleaned our rooms, and if she found coins or money in our clothes, she ironed the bills and stacked the coins in a neat pile on our dresser. At Christmas time, she gave me and my sister gifts. She was so sweet and thoughtful. She loved us. Becky and her adult nieces, Linda and Sylvia, babysat us when my parents were on vacation. I was interested to see where Becky lived, and one day my mother took us downtown to her apartment. It was nice, the place where elderly people lived, a safe building. She lived up high, maybe on the 10th floor. But what struck me was that she had every single school photo of me and my two sisters framed and hanging on her walls. Like 20 or so school pictures of these white kids from the suburbs. We really were her family. My parents separated when I was 14, and my mother was absolutely despondent. She cried all the time. Becky, obviously concerned for me and my sisters, confided to us that her husband had left her many years prior, and she identified with my mother. Becky took care of my mom, comforting her, and it must have been hard for Becky to see our family dissolve this way. My grandfather, the one who would wait for her at the bus stop, had died the previous fall, and we were still in mourning over that. My mom's mom had died the previous August, so my mother was in a really bad state of mind. Becky was our rock, someone who arrived twice a week to keep our home running. Then, the unthinkable happened. In the summer of 1980, we returned home from summer camp. My mother told my sister to tell Becky that lunch was ready. My little sister, 11 at the time, came into the kitchen and said Becky is asleep with her eyes open. Mom and I just shot each other this knowing look. Mom ran downstairs to Becky while I dialed 0, because there was no 911 at the time. The paramedics took her to a hospital, and she died later that day from a stroke. We weren't allowed to see her in the hospital. We followed the ambulance, and they wouldn't let us in because we weren't family, but we were. Becky spent more time with us than her actual family. I saw her daughter and a few other family members behind the glass, and that was as close as we were allowed to be in her room. She was really brain dead by the time she went to the hospital, and I saw the paramedics try to revive her in our family room. She basically died in our home. So, why the long story, you ask? I had to give you some background. My mom finally started going out, trying to meet men. One night out of every weekend, I had to babysit my little sister, because my oldest sister was 18 and had moved out at the time. I wasn't happy about this because I was in high school and I wanted to be with my friends. While I was babysitting, I'd hear noises upstairs. I'd run upstairs and our dog would be asleep on the sofa, and my little sister would be asleep in her bed. But I swore I heard footsteps. This kept happening, and I'd tell my mother, but she never believed me. My mother and father reconciled briefly. He had moved back in, but I wasn't happy about it. He'd hurt my mom by having an affair. One night, while Dad was there, I heard this weird wailing. I thought it was the neighborhood fox, who routinely wailed at the moon, but this sound was much closer. I thought maybe the fox was on the side of the house, by the woods. As I tried to lift up my roller blind, I could hear his wailing. It was coming from above my head, in the attic. I got in bed, too afraid to tell my skeptical mother. I knew she wouldn't believe me. At breakfast, Dad said, "Did anyone hear that weird noise last night?" I said, "Yes, I wasn't crazy. There was a weird noise." Dad said it was coming from the attic. He set animal traps up there, but there weren't any animals in the attic. Then Dad and Mom split up for good. I'd still hear the footsteps when I was alone in the house. Years went by. I moved out, got married. In 1992, I separated from my husband and moved in with my mother. My mother went to Florida for the winter, and I was alone in the house. I started dating. One day, in the family room downstairs, my boyfriend said, "What the heck is that?" He heard footsteps. I was immune to him at this point, and I said, "I think it's Becky. She died in this house, and she loved us. If it is her, she's just here to watch over us." A couple of weeks went by. My boyfriend and I were in the living room having a romantic date by the fire, and the lights were off. There was just the light of the fire. He went upstairs to use the bathroom, and then he came out of the bathroom and I looked upstairs. He just stood there, frozen, with his eyes bugging out. I thought he was drunk. I said, "What's the matter?" He said, "Didn't you see that?" I said, "What?" He told me, "A woman in a pink sweater just walked past you." I quickly looked around, but I didn't see anything. But I knew it was Becky. I'd never told my boyfriend that Becky wore a white maid's uniform and a pink cardigan. She wore that pink cardigan all the time. I called my mother to tell her, and she finally believed me. I forgot to mention, my father, my grandmother, and my sisters all went to Becky's funeral. My mother didn't go, though. Everyone there was under the impression that I was named after Becky. In truth, my mother told me that she named me after Becky Thatcher from Tom Sawyer, but I let Becky's family believe that I was named after her. It made them happy, when they told me how much Becky loved us. I knew that already, but it was nice to hear. This person includes an edit that says, "My mother sold the family home many years ago, and she sold it to a man named Wright. At some point, there was an open house, and my younger sister was in town, and we went to the open house. I asked the woman who was renting if she had heard any strange noises, and she said no. Years go by. My son was in college in Gettysburg, which is about an hour and a half from Baltimore County, where the house is located, and he met a young man named Clark in college. Clark didn't have a car. He learned that my son lived in Baltimore County and asked for a ride home from one of their school breaks. As they got closer to Baltimore, my son asked Clark where to go. He says, 'Do you know where Tarmouth Road is?' My son said, 'Yes, I know exactly where that is.' So they head down Tarmouth Road. Clark says, 'Turn left on the next street.' And my son starts getting weirded out. Then Clark says, 'I live at the last house on the right.' It was my childhood home. Clark lived in my house, the Becky house. I've run into Clark several times since then. My son went to his wedding, and they're still good friends. They couldn't believe that they both lived in the same house. They even had the same room. small world. I didn't have the nerve to ask Clark if he'd ever heard strange sounds. I wanted to, but I just couldn't ask him because I didn't want to embarrass my son. My mom said goodbye. My mom had been wheelchair-bound with bad hip issues my whole life. She always put up a good fight and a brave face despite constant pain because she had two kids to take care of, especially me, who was the youngest. She had been in and out of hospitals my whole life trying to fix her hip, but nothing had ever stuck. And I very rarely, if ever, saw her walk, besides old pictures or videos. Unfortunately, her luck continued to go bad as she was dealing with cancer around 2016. Cervical cancer, to be specific, and unfortunately, even though the cancer had been beaten, she had radiation too quickly and consecutively, and it did irreversible damage. It was a surprise to me that she was dying, and I didn't even have time to really grieve, because the time between finding out and her dying was within 24 hours. Well, I was rocked from this, and it messed me up for a while, but I remember that a few nights after she had passed, I had a dream about a house party. She was there, and I remembered her in her chair, but I remember, despite the dream vibe, where you don't usually remember much, I still remembered her grabbing me and made sure to tell me, "I love you," in a way that your parents or important people do when they really want to tell you something with urgency and clarity. It might not be much, and it could just be my own grief that influenced it, but I think if anything could prove an afterlife to me, it was that moment, and she chose a wonderful way of doing it. Farm located on a road named after a lost enslaved person's graveyard. In 2016, my husband and I purchased a foreclosed home on over 10 acres. When my friend sent me the listing, I saw the street name and was curious. I didn't know what it would actually mean in the near future. Now, I won't be posting the name of the street or the state that we live in just for safety reasons. Why? Well, I listen to too much true crime and I know better. You guys are some weirdos. Here's the history. The graveyard. My street is named after a long-lost graveyard that was the final resting place for many people in a small community of enslaved peoples. There's written and transcribed history of its location, but it's never been found, and all that remember its location have now passed on. The only major clue that we have is that it was marked by a large brown stone. In our area, stones and boulders are not common, so that would be a good landmark, but it's never been located. The reason this graveyard is notable is for one supposed resident. From my reading, he was a well-known enslaved man who became a soldier and later a talented author, publishing multiple books. His life is fairly well documented, but the end of his life is where the details begin to fray. Due to being forced into hiding, his whereabouts become hard to track. Some say he perished in Pennsylvania, while local lore insists that he died and was buried here. Other known residents, someone named Henny. There have been stories as well as information listed in records and maps of a descendant of enslaved people, a woman named Henny, who also lived in this area. One of my neighbors, who's lived on this land since childhood, remembers her when she was alive. I have another neighbor who recently built his home on family land. One day, I had the pleasure of meeting his extended family. They were telling me about their history of the land when the eldest grandmother told me of her mother's cabin. She pointed into the woods nearby where I knew the ruins of a cabin were and said, "My mama and Mrs. Henny and I was born in a cabin right over there." Henny will become relevant here in a bit. Here's the spooky. I'm just going to list these in order. First was the distorted broadcast. We had to do a large amount of renovation when we bought the home, so we spent time there with very little furniture. No TV, no stereo, no radio. We used headphones for audio entertainment, but mostly it was very quiet there. I had been at the house all day and had been hearing this strange garbled sound. It was faint, but it sounded like you had an AM radio tuned between two stations. I could hear talking, but I couldn't understand the words, and there was static along with an occasional few notes of out-of-tune music. I had been hearing this all day, and finally mentioned it to my husband when he came home. He sort of froze and stared at me. I said, "What?" He then told me that he had been out in the woods exploring and found an old glass tube radio. He, of course, thought that it was neat and brought it home. He put it in the basement just that morning. The next event I'll call the door. There's a door going between my basement to my garage that's large, heavy, and poorly fitted, and it's a pain to open and close. When you do close it, there's quite a big sound from the door squeezing into its almost too small frame. I've been home alone on multiple occasions when I know that door is closed, and I suddenly hear it close on its own without ever hearing it open. Another event is what I'll call the elemental. I consider myself sort of sensitive to things beyond the veil, enough so that I've educated myself on the different manifestations that can occur. I strongly believe that there's something that resides in my basement that isn't human. It's energy without a face, but a lot of opinions. We have experienced cold breezes, lights going off and on, and just a general feeling of F off. Not in a violent way, but in a I've manifested here, this is mine, get out kind of way. Some days it doesn't mind sharing space, and others you can feel it rushing and pushing you out of its area. It seems to mind me less than my husband and former dog walker. It could be who shuts, and I assume opens, the door. Another event is what I'll call the lighter. My entire life, I've believed in the paranormal, but I've never experienced something that I couldn't explain. But that changed in this house. My husband and I were cooking dinner when a series of strange events occurred. We had fully moved into the house and had the Alexa playing music. We were listening along when the song changed mid-chorus to "Tequila Makes Her Clothes Fall Off." And this is going to sound like I made it up, but I swear to you guys, this is what happened next. A bottle of Patron that had been sitting on the counter since our wedding a year earlier, it suddenly expelled its cork onto the counter. We both watched it happen. Taking my cue that something wasn't right here, I went to grab some sage from storage. Oh, how I thought that was going to help. I don't even know. From the kitchen, I hear my husband shout, "No, F this. Burn the whole house down." I come back in, confused, and he says, while pointing to a one of two long-nosed lighters that we had on the counter because our stove wasn't lighting properly, he said, "That lighter just spun around on the table completely on its own." He was pointing to the purple lighter with a red one beside it. I was shocked, and I rejected the idea as some sort of joke. I said, "No, it didn't. You're making that up." I finished my sentence and watched as right in front of me, The red lighter did its own spin as if spun by an invisible hand. That's one sight that I cannot explain or dismiss. Another incident I'll call the emergency. At 4 a.m., I was passed out on the couch and the house was quiet. Suddenly, there's loud banging and flashlights at my front door. I scream, and my husband comes running out of our room in his drawers and answers the door to four county police officers with their guns drawn. Once he verifies that he's the homeowner, they ask if anyone was in distress. We told them no and asked why. Well, apparently, the sheriff's department had received not one but three calls from our landline to 911 where they could only hear screaming. We don't have a landline phone. Worse more than that, the power company accidentally cut our physical landline cable in the ground just a year prior to this. Here's the event that brings Henny back to the situation. This story is borrowed from my neighbor who knew Henny. When my neighbor was a child, her father was a farmer and used to give Henny produce. Every day, Henny would walk 2 miles over fields and woods to pick up various veggies from his farm. Now, this wouldn't be that odd, but Henny was in her 80s and completely blind. Stories were told that Henny was actually a witch, and that's how she managed the journey without her sight. Even more stories about how her sight was lost. They said she was much younger when she found out that her husband had been having multiple affairs. To punish him, she cast a spell or brewed a potion that made him deaf, blind, and mute so that no woman would want him. The payoff for that spell was that when he died, she would also suffer one of the three fates. He died years later, and suddenly, she went blind. Many years later, after her passing, her cabin, still partially standing but mostly taken back by the woods, my neighbor and her brother were riding horses down the road. Suddenly, these calm, bomb-proof, quiet, sensible horses planted their feet and refused to move another inch. No matter what they did to push the horses forward, they pranced, they pawed, and they wanted to turn back down the road. When my neighbor looked to find what they were so upset about, she followed their gaze to the edge of the woods where the walls of Henny's cabin stood, and there, within a window, was Henny watching them with her milky blind eyes. Here are some smaller occurrences. Just weird things that have happened that don't have a whole story attached. One I'll call the barn. We cleared land and built a barn in 2019. Since then, I've heard the songs of a child and the voice of a man in the barn. Clear enough that I've gone looking for them. I don't know the workings of new structures attracting spirits, but we never experienced this before the barn was built. It seems that if there's a spirit of a female child, she likes the horses. I do find missing things in places that make no sense at all, like she's playing with me. I never hear the singing and the harsh male voice at the same time, so I don't think that they get on. Another event I'll call the light in the woods. When we moved to the property, there was no one around for acres and thick, mature forest surrounding us. We cleared some land for a paddock for our horses and then started noticing a warm orange light in the woods just beyond the fence line. I saw the light one night and insisted that we investigate it in case it was something or someone camping in our woods. My husband wasn't interested in seeing the spooky light in the woods and said that we should wait till daytime to go look. The next day, we hiked up there to see what it could be. We found the ruins of another cabin that we didn't know was there, exactly where the light was shining from, and we could still see the light. This next event I'll call Man in Overalls. Both my husband and I have seen some sort of out-of-the-corner-of-our-eye type of thing. An older black man with curly white hair wearing overalls. Usually, when we're out doing something on the land, we just see him walking on the farm like he has somewhere to be. No interactions, just a brief flash of him and movement and then he's gone. There's more that I'm sure I've forgotten about or blocked out of my mind. I have a lot of interest in locating the graveyard and giving it and its residents the respect it deserves, as well as having a medium do a visit to our farm. If either of these things are something you have expertise in and would like to help or assist with and research with, please send this person a DM. I hope this was at least interesting, as I had some time at work and felt like typing this up. Ghost in the Bog. My family is originally from a small fishing village called Catalina, Newfoundland. About 4 or 5 miles north of Catalina is an even smaller village of Little Catalina. The surrounding area is covered in small ponds and bogs. In 1913, the town of Catalina held a dance for the local youth. My great-grandmother was about 13 years old at the time and was in attendance at this dance. According to her, a girl from Little Catalina came as well, walking the few miles. Her name has been lost to history, though. Well, that night it was unusually dark, and a fog rolled in off the North Atlantic. The dance finished at about 9 p.m., and everybody went home. My great-grandmother said that the next morning, the girl's parents were riding in their wagon, stopping at everybody's houses looking for their daughter, thinking that she may have stayed in Catalina with friends or relatives. One boy said that he saw her walking down the road towards Little Catalina after the dance. A search party was organized, and for 2 weeks, local men searched the forests and the bogs, while fishing boats scanned the coastline, but never found any sign of this little girl. Eventually, everybody came to the grim conclusion that she must have gotten lost in the dark and fallen into a bog hole, which, like quicksand, will suck you down. Months later, one man claimed to have seen her floating over the bogs one evening. He said that he attempted to go out to her, but she disappeared into the forest. I suppose nobody put much weight behind his claims because he was a drunk. Years later, though, probably early 1920s, my great-grandmother said that she was out berry picking in the bog with her sister as the sun began to set. She said that she looked across the bog and saw a little girl floating steadily and smoothly over the ground. She said her movement was so smooth that there was no possible way that it could have been a real person walking. My great-grandmother claimed to have seen her a few more times throughout the years, and she since passed in 1991. In the summer of 2008, I was 16 years old. My grandfather and I were spending the summer in Little Catalina with relatives. Being old enough to drive, I spent most of my days in Catalina at the swimming hole. One evening, I was driving back with a distant cousin, and as we were passing the bogs, he pointed out the windshield and said, "What's that?" When I looked over, I saw a little girl standing in the bog. Except, the strange thing was her height. She seemed overly tall for the distance that we were away from her. Was about 40 yards. I would have guessed that she would have been 7 feet tall, but her proportions didn't seem to match being that tall. I slowed down and I asked my cousin, who's a local, if he knew her. He said no. The girl then turned and smoothly and quickly floated away behind some trees. My cousin and I were genuinely freaked out and we drove back home. When I got home, I told my grandfather what I had seen, and all he said was, "Huh," and then told me the story about my great-grandmother telling him. He said over the years he had heard of people who had seen a ghost in the bogs, but always thought it was just a story to keep kids from playing out there, since it was so dangerous.